Good afternoon. You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM, broadcasting to the Fraser Valley, broadcasting from the University of the Fraser Valley's Emmitsburg campus on the traditional and unceded territory of the Solar people. I am your host, Sajid Atwal. I have an exclusive for you today, an interview with Bruce Bandman, a conservative member of the Legislative Assembly. He just crossed the floor and became a conservative member, and we will be talking about why he did so. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM. Thank you for joining us today. I have the great privilege to be joined by the newly minted Conservative MLA of British Columbia, Bruce Bandman. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Sir G.
And my very first question for you is, can you please share the factors that led to your decision to switch from the BC United Party to the Conservative Party? Were there any specific differences of opinion that led you to change your affiliation?
I would say what happened was, and I'd have to go back, and let me tell you, I got to do a little history on this so that people can get some context. My family, my grandparents on my father's side, were Mennonites that escaped the Russian Revolution, actually not far from where the invasion took place in Ukraine, again, just recently. And they escaped. Canada opened up its arms and allowed them to worship in the way that they felt was right for them. They were able to pass their values and teach their children the way they wished. And they also were always proud to be able to not only vote, but have the ability to speak what was on their minds, whether other people agreed with that or not, the freedom of speech, which I hold so dear to my heart, and it's personal. So what was happening, and what a lot of people don't understand, is with my party and with others, for that matter, there are what's called whip votes, where the party actually tells you how to vote. Now, in some cases, I can understand there are party lines that are followed, but then there gets to be an excessive point of that. And, it becomes what is politically convenient or politically correct or the political winds of the day. And there was one particular vote where I was told, if you're not in favor of this vote, you need to leave the building. Don't be here when the vote is counted. And I come back to, I did leave the building, and I found it both humiliating. And in retrospect, I wished I had stayed and, in spite of what I had been told, had stood up and voted with my conscience. Mm-hmm. And where I come to this is I need to be able to speak about the concerns of those who voted for me and put their trust in me to fight for their issues. And when you are being told how to vote, or even down to the point of what topics you can talk about and how to talk about them, that becomes very, very difficult. And I struggled with that. What the BC Conservative Party, or the Conservative Party of British Columbia, has said and promised is many, many more free votes and the ability to speak my mind in the legislature about concerns in my riding. And let me explain why that's important. So if you take a look at the needs of Northern British Columbia, which is in the natural gas and petroleum industry, the interest of the residents up there may be drastically different from what is happening in the Lower Mainland or Vancouver and what they think is important. The forestry concerns and natural resource sectors in certain provinces, certain areas of the province, would be drastically different than, say, what was happening in Victoria or on Vancouver Island in parts of it. And the ability for an MLA to speak up on those concerns in those ridings becomes very, very important, whether I agree with them personally or not. And that, to me, is the hallmark of democracy. And I think British Columbians are looking for something different, where local politicians, locally elected MLAs, can speak on behalf of what's important to those areas. Here we have a large agricultural base. There are those that think that dairy and poultry farming should be shut down. Yet that is the major economic driver of this riding, is agriculture. And those two sectors alone provide an awful lot of jobs and also auxiliary jobs that are in that industry. So those issues here will be very, very important. And I now, through this move over to the BC Conservative Party, have the ability to speak on behalf of the issues in my riding and honor the vote that people took when they voted for me to be able to do so. And I don't think that most British Columbians are aware of that, but I think that they're starting to wake up that that is one of the major reasons why people are turning their backs on democracy and think it doesn't work.
And Bruce, if I may, as you know, we just a couple of years ago faced the Fraser Valley flooding, and you played an active role in the legislature speaking for that Fraser Valley region. And your new leader and your new leader's policies may differ dramatically against your policies on climate change, on harm reduction, and on student rights in universities and schools. How do you make that happen between you and your new party when the platform may differ so dramatically between what you believe and what the party believes?
Well, you've wrapped an awful lot of things into one area there, and I'm not so sure that about whether I agree with everything you said. But what did happen was John did speak out about climate, and in his area. That's a major forestry area and ranching area. Yeah. So that's one of those things that I'm talking about. Now, do I necessarily agree? I'll go back to the premise. I may not agree with what someone says, but I definitely agree that they have the right to say it. And sometimes that makes it a little awkward. And there are going to be differences of opinions on nuances throughout the province. That does not necessarily mean that everyone in the party necessarily agrees or disagrees with that. And I think we need to get away from this all or nothing attitude that's been prevalent of late, that everybody has to be on the same page about every little bit and every little bit of nuance. You know, I jokingly say, you know, I've been married a long time. My wife and I don't agree on everything. And so how can you expect every different region of the province to agree politically on policy when you bring it home? It's ridiculous to think that everybody has to agree on the thing. And what's happening now in politics is if there's one little bit that's outside of the step, that everybody jumps on the bandwagon and tries to brand you or announce you and say you're a denier, you're a hater, you're a this, you're a that, and it's not helpful. And not only that, it's illogical. And I think by talking through these issues, you come to a better consensus. And keeping in mind that there are regions of the province that have totally different things that are important to them. And I believe that people want their locally elected official to be able to go to the floor of the legislature and freely bring up what's important to them, whether or not that's in 100% agreement with party lines or not.
And one more issue that I would bring up. As you know, this area has a large South Asian population, and you got a very, very large percentage of the South Asian vote because you were the mayor of Abbotsford before you became the MLA. How do you answer the critics that say that you will lose a lot of South Asian vote and that South Asians will see you leaving to a party that's known as a whites-only party, basically?
Well, I think you're confusing federally with provincially. I don't think that's true. I can tell you that we have a ton of diversity that's now seeking to come run with us. So I don't think that's accurate. That again would be how other political parties want to try and paint you into a corner. It's just not true. That's not me. And I think that especially those from, you know, let's take a look at who lives in Abbotsford, the major groups so for instance, you have the Mennonites that escaped Russia and have a value for democracy and freedom. You have the Dutch that survived under German occupation. And you have in this area, those that come from Punjab, who know an awful lot about persecution and how important it is to have the freedom to speak your mind and vote. So I think that what will happen is that they will look at me, they will look at the values of the party, And I think they will actually be very abrasive. And most of the congratulations I'm getting actually are from South Asians. So I think that is a red herring. There will be some, I guess, that feel that way. And the beauty of democracy is there's no guarantees that I will be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. There's no guarantees I'll be reelected if I was to stay with the party I was in, because the BC Liberal Party no longer exists. It changed its name. So I believe that every election cycle, every local politician is basically putting their works online as to whether or not they will be reelected for another term. And I think that people who know me will support me. Mm-hmm. And I think that we will now have especially when they find out that I will have more freedom to be able to be an advocate on their behalf. So I think that, is that challenging? Yes, it is challenging. But I think that people will understand. And as this party gets stronger in momentum, they'll realize that's an old stereotype and it's nowhere near the truth.
You keep on saying that you're going to get more freedom to speak. How do you see that happening now? Because now with you joining the Conservatives, you make official party status. You see yourself speaking more freely for your people in this riding?
Absolutely, because that's what John Rustad has promised to do. It's the major reason why I came over to the party. He has said he's going to allow, even if we were to buy form government tomorrow, let's say, he said he would allow more free votes. Of course, there's going to be a vote on budget and stuff that would be, there are certain votes that you need to follow party lines, but he would allow more freedom of votes, and he would allow more freedom to get up and advocate on behalf of your riding. And I think that Canadians and British Columbians are sick and tired of this, what we call whipped votes. Like I vote for the local guy to bring up my local issue, but then I find out that didn't meet the top three issues that the party wants to carry forward. Or that issue is too thorny because it may not agree with other riders. And we will now have that right to be able to speak up and be an advocate on behalf. And I think a lot, what I'm hearing is most Canadians and British Columbians that are phoning me are going, thank goodness we're returning to the roots of democracy again, where I know I can make a phone call and that can trigger a difference. And my local representative will be able to carry my issues forward in an unfettered way and won't be gagged or told what to say or what not to say or how to vote.
The two previous MLAs that held the riding prior to you also switched parties and became independents or became one, two different parties. Why do you think Abbotsford South has such a history of switching parties?
You know, you'd have to ask my two previous colleagues. I can only speak on behalf of my integrity and what I think is important. And I would just be guessing. And I have no idea on that. I can only tell you that at the end of the day, I have to be able to look directly in the mirror and say, you followed your integrity, you followed your path.
And can you discuss some collaboration ideologically? What is your plan now that you switched over? What are you going to be pushing in the legislature that's going to help your community?
Well, I think one of the things we need to look at is the carbon tax. I just finished having lunch with a bunch of farmers, and they were all saying how much that the carbon tax is hurting them, how it's adding to our food costs. In addition to that, the carbon tax is, you got to have a truck that takes the foods to market. All of this adds to the cost of what we're doing. And it would be one thing if the carbon tax were being directed into green energy or green ideas or in research and innovation. It's not. It's just going into the general revenues. It is nothing more at this point as a hurtful tax grab. So that would be one issue. I think that we need to find a way of helping students. We need to find a way of helping create more affordability and better jobs out there so that we can afford the massive inflation that we've just gone through. So I think there's a whole bunch of interesting ideas that are worth talking about. And as you know, there are, I'm not going to be the last, I do believe, of people that come over. I think that you will find in the next, well, I think there are others that agree with me that will come over to the party. And I look forward as to what ideas, what the bulk of which we can agree on and move forward. There's a whole bunch of them, and we're we're in that stage. But right off the top, I would say carbon tax. I would say the other thing is that I believe that we have to find a way of making school more affordable for those that want to go on either to get a career in the trades or go on to higher education for whatever. We've got to find ways of removing the financial burden off the backs of our students. That, for me, is a personal one, and I will be pushing that idea forward, and I welcome ideas. I think, for instance, going to more of an apprenticeship program where you can earn while you learn. Maybe there's a way of doing that all kinds of different fields. But what I know now is I have grandchildren that are saddled with educational debt, and I worry about them, and I worry about them being able to get ahead in life. I think, for instance, we need to be looking at teaching financial literacy in schools so that people understand how money actually works. And I think there are many, many different areas that we can look into. Those are just a couple off the top of my head.
And you just said you don't think you're the last one to leave the party. Do you expect other people to follow? And what does that say about their former party's leadership?
You know, I'm going to leave the comments on the former party's leadership alone. I don't think any good comes from throwing stones, so I'm going to leave that alone. But I will tell you that I am not the only one that isn't 100% satisfied. And I would say that people are now looking at their own integrity and their own options, and it would not surprise me if we see more.
And one last question on a local front. As you may have heard, last Monday there was a city council public hearing on a property on McKenzie Road that was shut down. That project was causing, some people say, air pollution, some people say chicken manure was in danger of getting into the water supplies of the city. What is your comments about them?
That piece of property also caught fire, as I recall. And I would say that this is one of the cases of different branches of government pointing at one another with the inability to be able to actually come in and police stuff. I you know, most people that live around that area would have been fine had what was originally set out been complied with. They weren't opposed to the compost system. What happened is it got out of hand, and then it took way, way, way too long for someone to actually come in with compliance to have it actually put in. And their concerns are, and it was one of my frustrations, actually. I have sent letters to different branches, government, to try and get this into compliance and to deal with it. They weren't saying, no, don't do it, if you talk to the neighbors. They were saying, you need to do it by following the existing rules. And it to me, was one of those things where the red tape just seemed to get in the way to be able to actually come in and have a certain individual follow the rules.
And what would your final message be to our listeners?
You know, my final message would be that this was not an easy decision for me. Nobody, you know, like, it's always difficult when you're the one rocking the boat and you're the one that's the first one to go, so to speak. I want to thank the party that I was with. Many of the people there I consider still to be friends and colleagues. I think I'm off a few Christmas card lists but I want people to know that I did this because I value their trust in me to bring their issues to Victoria. And I now have much more ability to do that than I did before. And I hope I'm worthy of, you know, if I plan on letting my name stand again. Always before election time, I talk with my family and say, what do you think? Should I have, you know, can you take, because it's not just me. I have family members that have to listen to some of the stuff that's said about politicians, which is probably harder than them than it is on me. But if I go forward, I hope I earn the respect and the privilege of having people vote for me one more time.
Thank you for listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM with your host, Sajid Awal. Join me again next week as I have another great episode for you. This program was sponsored by the Local Journalism Initiative.